Hello and welcome back to MedTech Voices from RQM Plus. This time it's time for episode 3. We're focused on the pathway from a CER to a PMCF plan. By the way, as we all know, that's filled with landmines, right? Anyway, I have my esteemed colleagues, Tori and Nikki, joining us, and I have a whole bunch of tough questions for them. Number one, what are the typical concerns going from a CER to a PMCF plan?
Tori. The biggest concern from my perspective is, you know, lining up those specific and measurable objectives to what your endpoints are going to be in your study. And, you know, depending on the type of clinical literature that is available and how well those support your indications, that may be a difficult transition. And also, you know, how confident are you in the clinical data that you do have in your CER? Is this an accessory type device that the studies are really looking at the full procedure and this is only a small component of it? Is it only one study that you're looking at instead of multiple case studies, for example? So really, what is that level of confidence, or what level of confidence do you have in deriving these endpoints from the objectives that you've laid out within your CER?
Tells me that one's got to be really careful about setting up the clinical strategy up front, right? More often than not, the clinical evaluation plan, which tends to be an afterthought, unfortunately, needs to be set up up front. You need to have a really good grasp on your indications, target patient population, intended use, in terms of deciding what your objectives need to be. And then eventually, getting a really good handle on your level of confidence on these objectives is really going to matter, which leads us into our second question. I have an inkling of what it's going to be, right? So what is the one most common item from a CER that doesn't readily translate into an effective PMCF plan?
It's probably those objectives. So more than a translation issue, what we see is that those specific measurable objectives are either kind of missing or just loosely related to the subject device. So for example, if you think of nutritional delivery devices, the intended purpose is to deliver the nutrition or medication into the stomach, but the studies around those are based on time of placement. When do we start treating? Were we able to successfully place it on the first attempt rather than the actual clinical success of the device?
Right. Let me bring in one more concept at this point, and that is to do with clinical benefit. Right. So depending on the device, the clinical benefit may be afforded to the patient or even may be afforded via patient management to the user. And very often, this isn't effectively defined in the CEP, right? Which means the CER essentially ignores it, which makes your benefit risk analysis really, really tricky. In the past, there wasn't so much focus on clinical benefit. Unfortunately, I've been a reviewer. I can say this with conviction. You know, the focus was mainly on device performance, but this was about 3 to 5 years ago. Times have changed. We really need to make that transition from mere device performance all the way up to benefit to the user and patient wherever applicable. So, Tori, do you have any examples of devices where this has been a little bit of a challenge?
Yeah, I would say, you know, kind of going off that procedural versus device specific success has really been an area of, you know, particular note for me that I've seen manufacturers struggle with. We've had an example where we were working with a ocular grasper device, and the measurable objectives in the CER were improvement in visual acuity. And that improvement in visual acuity to say was solely dependent on that grasper is kind of a far stretch. So really reshaping that PMCF activity to focus on more of the mechanical aspects of the grasper, as well as the any unexpected side effects or adverse events from using the grasper, and less of the visual acuity improvement aspect from the patient.
Okay. Well, I know we deal with this pretty much on a daily basis, right? But for the benefit of our audience, how do you handle a typical situation where the intended use, the indications for use, and the safety and performance objectives and associated endpoints are unclear, especially for these accessory type devices whose primary data set for MDR submission is relying on clinical evidence that's published, right? How do you handle a typical situation like that?
Yeah. Well, we have the advantage of the PMCF activity to help kind of augment that clinical data that may have been collected. And we really do just go back to the basics. So to Tori's point with the grasper, we look at what is the actual function of the device, what is the intended use, and ensure that it's specific and clear enough to be able to flesh out a definition around what the technical or clinical success of that particular device actually is. And so this typically tends to happen more for accessory devices, the device like Tori mentioned, things that are, you know, not intended for the index procedure, but that come along to aid in it. Could be as simple as accessory devices from introducers to high risk guide catheters for CTO applications and so on.
Yeah. You know, to add to some of those examples, I can think of a whole variety of hemodialysis catheters that have been out there on the market forever, right? But apart from safety outcomes, there really isn't too much other than device failure to talk about actual clinical benefit, and these patients tend to be really sick as well. So those devices lend themselves to what we're talking about. Some of the other devices may be things like drug-coated balloons, right? That's one example that comes to my mind. Fortunately, there are good clinical studies to fall back upon, but PMCF does take a hit when it comes to some of those devices. And then let me mention a very specialty device, something called an IABP or an intra-aortic balloon pump, right? When we look at the CERs for these devices, they typically talk about improvement in cardiac output, but these devices typically tend to be used for 4 days to a week. Some of them can go a little longer, some of them shorter, some of them only intra-procedural, some of them pre-procedural, intra-procedural, as well as post-procedural. So there are many aspects, right, associated with clinical conditions of use. And when we go to set up a PMCF study, it becomes tricky because now the objective in the CER just said improvement in cardiac output. But from our perspective, in terms of designing a specific study, it needs to be improvement in cardiac output in the duration of use and up to the point of weaning the patient from the IABP. And then we have to understand the clinical indications for removal. So it can get a little tricky, once again, pointing to the need for a very focused clinical strategy. Now, we talked about, problems in terms of translating objectives and endpoints to an effective PMCF plan. I want to come to the last point of this discussion, which is how do you take some of the concerns associated with these gaps that we typically see, gaps associated with not having adequate acceptance criteria, how do you go about designing a typical proactive PMCF study in light of some of the deficiencies that we see?
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, when putting together that strategy and kind of falling back on that statistical approach that you're going to take with it, you know, with some of these gaps, we're not really setting ourselves up to be able to have a powered study. And we're going more towards that exploratory approach. And also, if you refer back to the last episode we released, you'll be able to see us discuss those differences between the powered and the exploratory approach a little bit further. An example I can think of more recently is I've worked with an implant that had a lifetime defined as 10 years. However, this device has only been commercially available for the past 1 year. So it's a class 3 device. PMCF is definitely expected. So how can this manufacturer start collecting clinical data when there's only 1 year of follow-up, when really they need to support that full lifetime? And all the studies, this is a knee implant. So, you know, there's lots of papers that have been published on successes of knee implants, and all of which measure at about that 10-year lifetime. So really, this initial PMCF approach of having an exploratory effort at that 1 year, collecting data that then can be used further, and keep having these PMCF iterations to collect, you know, 1 year, 3 year, 5 year, and then ultimately have that 10 years worth of follow-up.
You know, in this example that you brought up, I think it's very important. There may be multiple manufacturers in the same boat. Hopefully this is a situation where you have a solid in vitro durability testing data set where you can really rely on your reliability testing and viable analysis to justify device lifetime. All right. I think all of the items are pointing very strongly to an effective clinical strategy up front, which will, you know, help assuage many of your concerns. And with that, thank you very much. And I invite you to join us on our next episode when we will be with our medical directors. Thank you very much, everybody.